JC Corcoran Podcast.
The vaccine, which for reasons I will never comprehend, is being called Spikevax, and they're already hard at work trying to make it a household word.
For 2 years, Moderna has been working night and day to develop a life-saving COVID-19 vaccine so you and your loved ones can get back to what really matters. Family, friendship, eating indoors at an Olive Garden, falling in love. Falling in love while eating indoors at an Olive Garden. This is the fabric that forms the beautiful quilt we call life. And we here at Moderna are proud to add a new fabric, one that was just approved by the FDA. We're talking about
Spikevax!
Hey, you.
Me?
Me? What vaccine did you get?
Moderna?
Wrong! You got Spikevax! Spikevax? Glad you asked, you stupid piece of Spikevax is Moderna's FDA-approved COVID-19 vaccine. It's got all the life-saving ingredients with an extra dose of hell yeah! Eat my Johnson & Johnson! So when a pharmacist asks you what vaccine you want, what are you gonna tell them?
I'm going to tell them that I want Moderna.
No! Don't worry, you won't get sick, because you're getting Spikevax. You're approved by the FDA. Spikevax is brought to you by thousands of hardworking scientists and also Dolly Parton.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky, you're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. 204 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known. How you doing, kids? JC here at jcontheline.com. Cardinals and the Mets last night playing beanball. What the hell is going on? There's just something that happens when the Mets come to town. It's just been going on for, you know, not like the old days when we used to see the Mets all the time and we had this thing back in the 80s that was just magic. The hatred, the unbridled hatred that both sides had for one another. And then, of course, the fans made it even better than that because they really got into it. But those games between the Cardinals and the Mets in the 80s were something. And then, of course, things rekindled. What was it, like 2000, 2002, somewhere in there? The whole thing rekindled. It's sort of fascinating because it's just like every time that the Cardinals and the Mets rivalry kicked back up again, I started getting calls from all the TV stations and the newspaper and stuff like that. They wanted to interview me with the whole Mets or pond scum thing. And it was just fascinating. Every couple of years, it would rekindle. And then a couple of years after that, the famous Yadier Molina home run against the Mets at Shea Stadium, the Terry Pendleton home run, of course, in 85. And so last night, you know, Jordan Hicks, you know, the future of this franchise as far as pitching is concerned, he gets removed in the third inning because he took one off the wrist in the inning before that. Now, everybody's, you know, talking about the fact that Pete Alonso got hit in the head. Okay, well, you know, two Cardinal players had been brushed back earlier in the game. One was Nolan Arenado, and the other one was Dylan Carlson. And just because they were able to get out of the way doesn't mean that the Mets were not pushing their luck with these high and inside fastballs. So now here comes Pete Alonso, arguably their best hitter. And both benches emptied briefly, although nobody really came face-to-face. They sort of came out onto the field. Max Scherzer is, like, screaming all sorts of stuff. This morning when they showed the replay of this, they had to marble out the video of his mouth because you could read his lips very, very easily, and the news stations didn't want any of that. But as you know, if you've listened to me over the years, I've been harping on this idea that all other professional sports have some sort of mechanism to inform people in the arena, the ballpark, wherever it is, and the folks watching at home when there's some sort of a disputed play or somebody has to leave the game and you want to know his condition and stuff like that. So they're doing a little better this year in Major League Baseball. They at least tell you what's going on a disputed call, you know, when there's a challenge or something. But similarly, Jordan Hicks gets pulled out of the game in the third inning with a wrist contusion, and we don't find out about it until the sixth inning, and that's only if you're watching the game on TV. If you've paid for a ticket and you're sitting at the ballpark, they don't tell you, which is stupid. Have the U-man come on and say, Jordan Hicks was pulled out of the game. He has a wrist contusion. At least you know what's going on. We're going to come back and do the history of the Mets or pond scum a little bit later on in the podcast here today. So last night was the band recital for my daughter's middle school. She got all the kids out there. She's playing the trumpet now. And you don't expect too much out of it. You know, it's just basically playing scales and stuff like that. Although they did do a song last night. But it's amazing how quickly these kids progress. Because when the eighth graders came out, it was like, holy shit, these kids can play. They did a Stevie Wonder song last night. You know, you show up and they're expecting to hear Hot Cross Buns all night, like 10 different versions. And these guys are out there, the boys and the girls, playing Stevie Wonder. But the whole thing just sort of gave me the willies because it just reminded me of, I'm not going to tell the story again, I told it a couple of weeks ago about the recital I had to do when I was in eighth grade and we had this kid who froze up and screwed up the whole thing. And that was the day I put the guitar down and I pretty much never played it again because I was so traumatized by the entire thing. And the weirdest thing happened last night. We're sitting there watching the show and the kid who's playing the saxophone, first chair saxophone, starts playing. The concert's going on. Everybody's enjoying it. And pretty soon you're looking going, what the hell is that? What is it? What's on his face? The kid is playing the saxophone and has a massive nosebleed right in the middle. He didn't bump his nose. Nothing happened. You know, you're sitting there watching going, somebody better give this kid a towel. This kid is bleeding all over the place. And they had all the kids wearing black pants and white shirts. Now it's all over his shirt. It's all over his face. And somebody goes running and gets a little towel or something and just sort of throws it in his lap. Well, he's trying... In between notes, he's taking the towel and he's wiping his face, getting the blood off, and now it's just gushing. And the song is gone on. The kid's face is totally red, and the whole top part of his shirt is just soaked with blood. I felt so sorry. Everybody felt sorry for the kid. And at the same time, you're like, oh, what are we seeing here? How does something like this happen? Nice, pleasant evening. Nice, enjoyable evening, huh? I usually save the birthdays and the anniversaries for later on in the podcast, but I love this story so much I'm putting it up top here because it was 2006. And I remember when we heard about this story, we were doing the morning show at K-Hits, and we had a lot of fun with this one because it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. 16 years ago, we get the story that Keith Richards is in the hospital for a mild concussion because he fell out of a palm tree while vacationing in the Fiji Islands. Doctors had to drill a hole in his skull to drain a blood clot on his brain and had to remove part of his skull in a second operation after part of his brain collapsed. How old is Keith Richards?
He's 78 years old.
78. Okay. Now, if your grandfather, you know, back when you were a kid, at 78 years old, fell out of a tree and had to have a hole drilled in his skull to release pressure and blood clots and all that sort of stuff, you'd be thinking to yourself, let's start, picking out a cemetery plot. But he's Keith Richards. He's Keith Richards. You know, millions of years ago, the asteroid killed all the dinosaurs. Well, it killed the vegetation, and that killed the dinosaurs. But the cockroaches lived on. The cockroaches and the ancestors of Keith Richards, apparently. Oh, wait, here's the Mets here.
I mean, they're bad. Everyone knows it. Every pitcher in the league knows it. They're bad. They don't care.
The 3-2 pitch.
Oh, they're bad.
All right, a little inside baseball for you. I didn't know that. Bassett says the baseballs given to the pitchers are different every inning and different every game, making them hard to throw accurately. Moe's over here shaking his head.
Yeah.
Well, he's not the first to complain about this issue, but so far the league has been silent. about this.
I'm not sure if there's going to be any retaliation again today.
That's a lot last night.
Yeah, Mets are leaving town, so we'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah, so you got a day game today, and five players beaned in last night's game. Could I have a little fun at the ballpark this afternoon? Losing my religion, Michael Stipe. And there's something I never understood about this. You know, when you've got somebody who is from your city who makes it big in entertainment or sports or politics or something like that, you own that guy. You know, we own John Goodman. People always talk about it. Everybody has their own John Goodman story. Oh, I saw him once do this. Oh, I shook his hand once. Oh, I ran into him here. You know, it's stuff like that. Kevin Klein, Chuck Berry, you know, all of those people. But Michael Stipe from Collinsville, and hardly anybody ever brings it up. It's like he wasn't really from Collinsville. I don't know. Maybe because he never comes back and never sort of acknowledges where he came from. I don't know. But you'll all recall Losing My Religion, which won a Grammy back in the day. And it turns out that he changed a key lyric in the song Losing My Religion. Here's what he said. We released it as a single thinking it was going to set up the next song. It's such a weird song. We had no idea it was going to resonate the way it did. On memories of making the track, Stipe delved into changing the lyrics in the chorus. I changed one lyric, he recalled. That's me in the corner. That's me in the kitchen. He says there's this whole relationship that's happening only in the person's mind, and he doesn't know whether he's said too much or hasn't said enough. He's like in the corner of the dance floor watching everyone dance and watching the love of his life on the dance floor dancing with everyone because that's the most exciting person. Or he's in the kitchen behind the refrigerator. Then one word ended up changing everything. I changed kitchen to spotlight, and instantly, of course, the song became about me, he said, which it never was. Losing My Religion peaked at number 4 of the Billboard Hot 100. June 22nd, 1991, spent 21 weeks total on the charts. We do politics here on the podcast only when it's unavoidable. A couple of days ago, you had all of those, 2,200 memos via text sent to Mark Meadows in the White House on January 6th, and they released all of them, and you're starting to see a clearer picture as to what was going on behind the scenes and who specifically was involved. Now, they said that the next group of texts they're going to be releasing sometime in the next couple of days, it sounds like maybe next week, it's going to be all the ones from Ted Cruz on January 6th. Oh my gosh. Get some chips and a bucket of dip and get ready to turn on C-SPAN. Al Pacino turned 82 on Monday and celebrated by going to dinner with his 28-year-old girlfriend. She's the ex of Mick Jagger. They dated in 2017. He's 78 now, but clearly he was probably too young because then in 2019, she was seen with Clint Eastwood, who's now 91. So Al at 82 is what, just right? A forensic psychologist testified yesterday that Amber Heard suffers from borderline personality disorder and histrionic personality disorder. That means she could present as cute and girlish sometimes, but could be very destructive, dramatic, erratic, and unpredictable. And isn't that all people, by the way? Maybe except Jordan Binnington? When you use a famous song, rock and roll, pop, whatever, in a movie or a TV show, you don't just get to do that. You have to pay for it. You have artist rights, royalties, fees, and stuff like that. AC/DC's Thunderstruck is the most expensive song to license for movies, TV shows, and video games. It costs $500,000 to use it. They used it in Varsity Blues. Yeah, that was 20 years ago, and it's popped up in tons of movies since then. The series premiere of Bullshit, the Game Show. That's the name of it on Netflix. It's a reality competition where contestants are encouraged to lie their way through trivia rounds if they don't know the answer. It's hosted by Howie Mandel. If you remember Hogan's Heroes, there was a guy by the name of Larry Hovis, and he had a syndicated show back in the 70s called Liars Club, which, by the way, I stole and did a radio version of a couple of times. And basically what they would do is they would you'd have a panel of people, like four people sitting there. And Larry Hovis, it was his show, so he was on all the panels, and then they would rotate the other three guests from, you know, week to week. And so they would come out and somebody would hand them a piece of steel or a little wooden thing or just some sort of object that you couldn't identify. You're looking at it going, well, what the hell is that? Well, that's the whole point of the show. The point of the show is that they all know what this piece of whatever it is, they all know what it is, but nobody else does. So if I recall correctly, what they would do is they would pass the thing from one person to another, and they would each do a little dissertation on what they said the thing was, but three of them were lying and only one person was telling the truth. That was the show. Jimmy Fallon actually does a sort of an offshoot of that whole thing on his show. So they're going to try another reincarnation of this, and it's on Netflix, and more work for Howie Mandel. Man. Another show on Netflix premiering today, The Mystery of Marilyn Monroe, The Unheard Tapes. Right, right. Still milking the Marilyn Monroe thing. God. Late night tonight, Jimmy Fallon's got David Spade, the B-52s, who are retiring. This is their last tour. I guess they're going out on tour this summer, and then that's it. They'll be on Jimmy Kimmel tonight. Colbert is still in repeats because he's got COVID. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, I'm with James Corden. Paul Bettany, I'm with Seth Meyers. Trevor Noah has Terry Crews. If you've been following this story, they have shut down the production of the Bill Murray movie that they're shooting right now because he's been accused of inappropriate touching and stuff like that. So they said, got to shut it down. So Bill Murray figures, fine, then I'm going to fucking go home. So he gets on a plane yesterday. He's at LAX and was not in any mood to speak to the paparazzi. We have talked about this. We've talked about this. Bill Murray, not always the happy, jovial life of the party that you see in movies and TV shows. Margot Robbie playing Barbie. The first trailer is out on that. I think I'll go ahead and post that on my Facebook page after the podcast today. Casey Anthony. Remember this chick down in Florida? Mildly attractive, killed her little daughter, chopped her up, put her in a suitcase, and left her in a swamp, and then somehow beat the rap in a Florida court. She says she's going to tell the truth. She's ready to tell the truth in a TV documentary. Well, unless that TV documentary has her saying, yes, I killed my daughter, put her in a suitcase, and left her in a swamp, and then went out partying. Unless she says that, you're not going to believe this, but I won't be interested. Birthdays today, Lizzo, 34, Sheena Easton, she took the morning train, 63, Ace Frehley, and you know, for years we said Frehley, and it turned out that that was wrong all along, it's Frehley. Anyhow, from Kiss, he's 71, Kate Pearson from the B-52s, yeah, 74, you can sort of understand why the B-52s are cashing in their chips. It was 142 years ago today, 1980, Francis Clark and M.G. Foster patented the electronic hearing aid. Remember some of those old Three Stooges episodes where a guy was hard of hearing and he had like this giant horn that he just stuck in his ear and then tried to hear that way? That's what people who were losing their hearing had to resort to. Although I think that probably, I don't know, sometime in the next 50 years, historians are going to look back at the time when blind people were given a dog, because there's probably going to be some sort of technology to deal with hearing loss and sight loss and things like that. Ringo married Barbara Bach, his co-star in the movie Caveman, back on this date in 81, 41 years ago. And another one of those pure Hollywood stories. 26 years ago in 1996, Shauna Sand, she was a Playboy playmate. She marries Lorenzo Lamas. That was in 96. But in 2002, they divorced because she slept with his 18-year-old son. That's why all those movies are on Pornhub. That's got to be the reason why. I've heard.
Dear Dave, letter number three begins. What's with the eyebrows? Do you shave them off? Or are they a much lighter blonde than your hair? In which case, which do you dye, your hair or your eyebrows? Your pal, Gary Brown, St. Louis, Missouri. P.S. The Mets are pond scum. Yeah. Hold it right there, Gary. Let me make one thing clear here. The Mets, in fact, are not pond scum. I'll prove it to you with this chart. Okay. First of all right, the Mets emit CO2. Okay, so does pond scum. The Mets occasionally very damp. All right, same with the pond scum. The Mets consume microbes. Pond scum consumes microbes. The Mets failed to beat St. Louis in the NL East, and, well, so did the pond scum. Here's one difference. The Mets are eligible for free agency after 5 years. Pond Scum, not eligible for free agency after 5 years. The Mets annually sponsor Thermal Mug Night. Pond Scum, on the other hand, disdain flashy promotions. Finally, the Mets have one player named Mookie. Pond Scum, everyone is named Mookie. So, as you can see here...
Well, the Mets are playing the Cardinals again this afternoon. Maybe some more beanball we shall see. The Mets are Pond Scum t-shirts popping up all over the place, and I thought it'd be fun to go back today and close out the podcast with the history of the Mets are Pond Scum. So what you heard right there was really the culmination of something that had actually been going on for over a year. Back in 85, as we were talking about earlier, I was trying to figure out some way to personify, to intensify, to sort of capture the electricity that was going on involving this rivalry between the Cardinals and the Mets. And I had been watching an episode of Cheers, and Shelley Long comes back. I think it might have been the episode where she was on the motorcycle with the guy, and she shows up at the bar in her hair. She looks like Wilhelmina. And she comes in and mentions something about, you know, you're Pond Scum. And I thought to myself, that's pretty ugly. That's pretty disgusting. It's as good as anything else that anybody's going to come up with. So I started saying, the Mets are Pond Scum, the Mets are Pond Scum. And it took a while, and it eventually started to sort of catch on. But I had no idea it was catching on to the point where somebody would write a letter to David Letterman on viewer mail and say, P.S., the Mets are Pond Scum, as this guy from St. Louis did. Well, now it's like 11 o'clock on a Friday night, and my phone starts ringing like crazy. This is 1986, okay? People used to use the phone to talk to one another. I know. It's like discovering drawings by cavemen. So anyhow, now David Letterman has made the thing really, really famous. We can't even believe it. So a year later, I left that radio station and went over to 93.7 KSD, the classic rock station, doing the morning show there, the morning zoo. Became JC and the Breakfast Club. And the Mets are coming to town. We used to have these meetings. I think they were on Tuesday morning, a meeting of the entire staff of goofballs that pretty much worked on our show. I won't say exclusively, but quite a bit. So it was me and my partner at the time. We had two producers for the show, Libby Cochran and Judy Martin. And then we had our promotion and marketing expert, Scott Strong. And then the daughter of play-by-play man Dan Kelly of your St. Louis Blues. Kathy Kelly was in our promotion department. And we were sitting there going, okay, the Mets are coming to town. What are we going to do? And it was Kathy who actually came up with the idea of, why don't we get a plane to drag a banner that says, you know, JC says the Mets are Pond Scum. And we sort of all looked at each other and like, can we do that? And she's like, why not? So, you know, I go to the game. I take my date along. I know what's about to happen. And here's how it sounded in New York. Now keep in mind, this is the old Busch Stadium. And it had that rim, that big rim that went all the way around the top of the ballpark. So if you were sitting in the press box, it was really hard to see anything if it wasn't on the field. So what you'll hear is what we refer to in the business as dead air, and that means that your microphone's on, but nobody's saying anything. They weren't saying anything because you got to put yourself in their place. They're sitting there. All of a sudden, 50,000 people start cheering in the first inning of a ball game, and you're like looking around. They're all looking at each other like, what are we missing? What's going on here? Because they can't see the plane. They can't see the banner. All they see is 50,000 people just cheering wildly at nothing. At least they thought.
Well, hi, everybody. I'm Ralph Kiner, along with Fran Healy and Tim McCarver, all set for a very important series with the St. Louis Cardinals. If the Mets can win all three ball games, they will be 5.5 games back of the Cardinals. And the pitch back is a ball, and the Cavs won it one.
How about that sign up there? JC says the Mets are Pond Scum. Now, that's a t-shirt they're giving out here in St. Louis, and the fans reacting to that plane. There it is.
Okay, so that's the New York version. Here's how it sounded on, I think it was still called, the Cards Cable Network. Ken Wilson and Al Raboski describing the exact same thing.
The fans are reacting to something that's overhead. Okay, here it is.
And the pitch to her takes the count to a ball and a strike.
That's a plane with a message trailing from J.C. Corcoran. It says the Mets are pond scum. I guess the car, there it is.
And some 50,000 reacting.
Ken Wilson, how about that? Buy Bass for less. All right, so now this pond scum thing starts popping up everywhere. Everywhere. I'm watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Alex Redfield, a young doctor working at Washington University Med Center in St. Louis, Missouri, has won $64,000 and going for $125,000. Now, what do you miss about New York out there?
Well, there's a couple things I miss. One is being able to get any kind of food any hour of the day or night. Can't do that in Missouri. Another thing is the great public transportation, especially the Staten Island Ferry. Mm-hmm. I really miss that and being around the water.
All baseball teams?
Oh, yeah, I miss being able to go to see my favorite team, the Mets. Although
well, when they go to St. Louis, you can see them there.
Yeah, and then I have to put up with all the St. Louis fans saying, the Mets are pond scum. They have that saying down there.
What do they call the Mets?
They call the Mets pond scum.
Pond scum.
It's a holdover from the rivalry that the Mets and Cardinals had in the 80s. And this year, the Mets and the Cardinals met up in the playoffs again.
It was a great
so
playoff.
People revived the
But why rivalry. Pond scum?
I'm still not sure.
You know, a guy called me that years ago. I never knew what he meant.
Yeah.
Pond scum. Something else to worry about. All right. 64,000 going yes. for 125,000. One lifeline left, Alex. Let's do it. Let's go all the way, okay?
Okay.
And let's play.
In the 1980s, St. Louisans fondly referred to the Mets as pond scum, the driving force behind the catchphrase, radio personality J.C. Corcoran. Well, J.C.'s at it again with a different spin. Corcoran and crew are having 5,000 t-shirts and 7,000 signs printed up as we speak. A bold reminder, Mets are pond scum.
Fans can pick up free Mets are pond scum signs.
The Mets are pond scum.
The New York Mets are pond scum.
Nobody wants to go to New York and play the pond scum.
They're different players nowadays, but still pond scum.
I don't know where I heard it from, but it really gets catchy and it works.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you where it started with me.
Longtime St. Louis radio personality J.C. Corcoran chronicles in a new book how the roots of the Mets are pond scum go back to 1987 in a July regular season series against the Mets.
Started with a trade, the Cards sending first baseman Keith Hernandez to the Mets in June 1983 for relievers Neil Allen and Rick Ownby. It escalated when a St. Louis disc jockey called the Mets pond scum, and it climaxed when these teams fought a virtual three-year war for dominance in the National League East.
Okay, so maybe St. Louis fans, though, aren't so civil. Take a look at what we found tonight. These signs, thousands of them, will be going out tomorrow to fans, brought to you by a local radio station here. Pond scum, referring to that bitter rivalry back in the 1980s. We're going to see a lot more stuff like this, Mandy.
Wow, this is getting nasty. All right, thanks a lot, Lynn. So the big game is now less than 24 hours away.
Cardinals fans would do almost anything to make the Mets feel unwelcome, like revisiting the past. Thousands of posters will be distributed around Busch Stadium tomorrow, and they read, Mets or pond scum?
The Mets and pond scum. I'll never forget that.
But where did the phrase come from? Local radio personality J.C. Corcoran actually used it first in 1987.
Radio host J.C. Corcoran made it a household phrase.
Pond scum is waste. It is refuse. It is of no value. There is no purpose for its existence. It is useless.
What's in this stuff?
Peter Bernhardt is a biology professor at St. Louis University, and as he scooped some scum, he also admitted he's a Mets fan.
Oh, I think pond scum gets a terribly bad rap.
Our Steve Bartlestein woke up today to some Mets bashing on the St. Louis radio this morning, so he checked it out.
See a bunch of cocky, jumpy East Coast guys.
We don't need it.
Well, if the traffic wasn't bad enough, we had to listen to this guy for more than 20 seconds. Still, upon arrival, I was cordial, as was this longtime morning team. In fact, we joined the show briefly, but then the gloves came off. But we can hold our own.
So what's your assignment today? What are you going to be doing?
Just slam you when I get back to New York.
But here's the best part, Met fans.
Now, the thing about it is, see, we're coming to New York this weekend. Uh-huh.
Yep, remember that face.
It's up to you, New York. New York.
These franchises, these cities, do not like each other.
Enjoy the business person special this afternoon at Busch Stadium. And that's it. The J.C. Corcoran podcast for Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. 204 days remaining our American democratic system. As we have noted, we're here every weekday morning just after 7 o'clock, Monday through Friday, absolutely free. We archive everything. You can email me at jc@jconline.com. Facebook the showgram with J.C. Corcoran back tomorrow to... I will say kick off the weekend, but it's only Thursday. I was thinking, oh, it's Friday. Shoot. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.